Thank you all for coming. The topic of tonight's shiur was, what was the topic? Should we be at this shiur? Whether the obligation or non-obligation of women in Talmud Torah. So this is a topic I think we've spoken about in the past, at least on one occasion, maybe even two occasions. I think Shavu was at your house by your pool or something, right? There was that cheesecake thing, you remember, right? So I think there was that thing, and then also around Hurricane Sandy time. But we'll talk about it again, and the truth is, my views on this issue change almost by the day. I'm taken by so many different arguments that I find compelling on different days. So it could be that I'll say something completely different than I said last time. But along those lines, I'm not really drawing any hard conclusions on the halachic element of it. But on the hashkafa, maybe we will draw some more concrete conclusions. So first on the halacha side of this issue of women and Talmud Torah. First thing we would have to figure out is what, if anything, are women obligated to learn? Because before we get into the optional stuff, we want to make sure that we're focused on what one has to do, on what one's requirements are in this world. And then we could discuss, okay, but I also find fulfillment and find a sense of closeness to Hashem in that which I'm not obligated to do. But we first want to make sure that we're taking care of our core obligation. Then, once we figure out what our obligations are, what about going beyond that obligation in Talmud Torah? Is this like shofar and lulav and sukkah, where women are not only permitted but even encouraged to fulfill these mitzvot, that there's no doubt, there's no question that women are exempt from all those mitzvot that I just mentioned, from shofar, from sukkah, from lulav, from mitzvot aseh shazman grama, although there are very, very few mitzvot aseh shazman grama that women are pater from. If you were to ask, like, how many do you think there are? How many mitzvot aseh shazman grama that women are exempt from do you think there are? Ballpark estimate. Don't say like 1,000, because there are only 613 mitzvot in the Torah, right? So, 5? Okay, so you're actually very close. Most people, when I ask my Talmidim, they're like, I don't know, about 50 probably. There are about 6, I believe, that women are actually pater from. There are more exceptions to the rule than there are the rule itself. Most mitzvah shazman grammar women are chayavos in because they're an exception to the rule. For example, matzah, woman's chayav in matzah. It's a mitzvah shazman grammar. Yeah, but the Gemara derives that it's an exception to the rule because anyone is not allowed to eat chametz is obligated to eat matzah. Kiddush on Shabbos, on Friday night, it's a mitzvah shazman grammar. Women are absolutely obligated in Kiddush because anyone who has to refrain from melacha on Shabbos is also obligated in Kiddush. So there are so many exceptions to the rule. But we know that when we do have that rule that women are exempt, we still are encouraged to do it. And that's the minhag, that women try to shake the lulav, they sit in the sukkah, unless there are bees or whatever, and they come to hear shofar, and we have an extra shofar blowing to make sure that everyone should have the opportunity to hear the shofar for a mitzvah that you're really pater from, that you don't have to do. So would we say the same thing by Talmud Torah, that it's something to be encouraged beyond what the core obligation is? And then the third issue, la halacha, is, and this is already crossing the line from halacha into public policy, is regardless of what a woman is encouraged to do or obligated to do or it's best to or not to do, how should that reflect itself in the educational institutions that we set up? Meaning, if we're going to conclude that, let's say, for argument's sake, we're not drawing any conclusions right now, but let's say for argument's sake, that it's a noble pursuit for a woman who's so inclined to learn Torah Shebaal Peh on a high level, does that mean that our educational institutions must offer Torah Shebaal Peh on a high level for women? Does that mean that they should offer it as a requirement, that they should offer it as an option? How exactly that should reflect itself in our educational institutions? Thank God I'm not involved in those decisions. Those are weightier decisions than people in my station in life. But it's something at least to think about. So starting at the very ground level, at the very basics, there is no doubt, you know, from a Talmudic perspective, when you go through the sugyas in the Gemara, there is no doubt, and it's really from the Psukim in the Torah, that women are definitely not obligated in the mitzvah of Talmud Torah as Talmud Torah. Meaning there's equally no doubt that women are obligated to learn certain things, but as far as the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, which for a man means that every spare moment of one's life is to be occupied in Talmud Torah, That is what the mitzvah is. The mitzvah is a constant mitzvah. Whenever you're not doing something that you are otherwise obligated to be doing, like mitzvos or eating or sleeping or working for a living, and whenever you're not doing something that you're absolutely obligated to be doing, all spare time is supposed to be spent in Talmud Torah. There is no doubt that women are not obligated in that. That is an explicit Gemara in Maseches Kiddushin and Daf Chav Tesan Beis. The Gemara tells us that a father has to teach his son Torah, but a woman does not have to teach her son Torah. And the Gemara says, how do we know that? Why doesn't a woman have to teach her son Torah? And the Gemara derives from Sukkim that only one who's obligated to learn is obligated to teach. Anyone who's not obligated to learn is not obligated to teach. So the Gemara says, okay, how do I know she's not obligated to learn? So the Gemara says, well, only someone who their parents were obligated to teach them are obligated to learn. But someone whose parents were never obligated to teach them have no obligation to learn. Okay, so that just leads to the next obvious question. The Gemara says, how do I know that the parents are not obligated to teach their daughters? So the Gemara says, because that's explicit in the pasuk. V'limadtem osam es b'neichem. It says you should teach your sons, and it's a clear drasha, b'neichem v'lo b'noseichem. Sons and not daughters, there's no obligation to teach a daughter Torah, and therefore there's no obligation on the daughter herself to learn Torah. So that's clear as far as the mitzvah of Talmud Torah goes. Yeah?
You know, sometimes you generalize when you see children use Zahar. Like, how do you know?
Right. So Balei HaTosos throughout Shas deal with that issue. Sometimes things are said in the masculine. But the rule that they use is, the whole Torah is written in the masculine. When things are said in the masculine, we assume it applies to everybody, to men and women. But when we specifically use a word like B'nei Yisrael or B'nei Aharon, as opposed to just speaking in the masculine to the Jewish people, just in the masculine form, then we Chazal always darshan, like by Tumas Kohanim, that Amar al Kohanim B'nei Aharon, that they shouldn't become tamei to a dead body, so we darshan B'nei Aharon v'lo B'nos Aharon, because it specifically says B'nei. So that's an excellent question. The Balei HaTosfos deal with that throughout Shas. So that's, you know, there's no arguing that at least at the very basic level, there's no basic chiyuv of Talmud Torah as far as Talmud Torah goes. And again, what I mean by as far as Talmud Torah goes, I mean to occupy one's every spare moment in Torah learning, which is the obligation for a man, and it is an overwhelming obligation. It is a very, very powerful obligation that few actually live up to. It's a very, very high standard of how to spend one's time, a very demanding standard of how to spend one's time. But that doesn't say anything about women not learning. It just says that there's no obligation, much like there's no obligation in sukkah or shofar or lulav, and women are always encouraged to do those mitzvos. Where do we get this idea from Chazal that there's maybe some issue, some problem, some negative side to learning? How could knowledge be negative? How could Torah knowledge be negative? I could understand how knowledge sometimes could be negative. How could Torah knowledge be a negative thing? So the Gemara tells us in Maseches Sota. Why Maseches Sota? Well, Sota is all about the Sota, the woman who is suspected of cheating on her husband. After being warned, she has yichud with the guy that she's suspected of, not exactly yichud, something called stira, which is akin to yichud, with the guy that she was suspected of cheating with. And then she goes through this whole process, which I'm sure you're all familiar with, where she drinks this magic potion, and if she's guilty or, she implodes. It's often misunderstood as exploding. She doesn't explode, she implodes. One of my fourth grade Rebbe used to tell us, the way to remember what a sota is you go to a store and you get a sota pop. So sota pops, that's how you remember what a sota is. That stuck with me, but it's really incorrect. The sota doesn't pop, she implodes rather than explodes. And if she's, every mnemonic, they work somehow. So and if she's innocent, of course, she's blessed with children and all the good things. So the Gemara in the Mishnah Maseches Sota tells us that sometimes a woman will be guilty and she's not going to implode, at least not immediately. She may slowly become ill and over time deteriorate, but it's not going to happen right there on the spot immediately because she has a zuchus. And some zuchuyos are so great that it will save her from that kind of end. So the Gemara says, well, what kind of zuchus could do that? Meaning everyone has some mitzvos. What kind of zuchus would be so great that it would save her in that situation. So Gemara says, what, you want to tell me zuchus de Torah? That it's the zuchus of Torah? Ha'ena mitzuva v'yosehi. It can't be that it's the zuchus of Torah, because the zuchus of Torah, by definition, is a lesser zuchus for a woman than any other mitzvah that she's obligated in. Because the rule is, Gadala mitzuva v'yosehi yoseh mi she'eno mitzuva v'yosehi. If you've ever actually paid attention to a bar mitzvah boy speech, there's like a 50% chance that he spoke about this topic. That one who is commanded in a mitzvah and does the mitzvah is on a higher level than one who's not commanded in a mitzvah. So how could it be that a mitzvah that a woman's not commanded in is going to be the big zuchus? No, the bigger zuchus is a mitzvah that you're commanded in. It happens to be a fascinating discussion why that rule should be true. That when I'm commanded in something, that's better than when I volunteer. I would think volunteer work is all the more impressive. So there are different explanations that are offered by Rishonim, but that's not really our topic for now. We'll just take it as a fact. You'll have to listen to all the Bar Mitzvah Joshua's to get the answers to that question, to why that's the case. But that is the case. So the Gemara says, it can't be the Zechus of Torah. So the Gemara says, oh, maybe it's the Zechus of other mitzvahs. Then the Gemara says, it can't be the Zechus of other mitzvahs either, because other mitzvahs pale in comparison to the Zechus of Torah. The Zechus of Torah is so great that nothing else could hold a candle to the Zechus of Torah. And I use that term, hold a candle, because the Gemara specifically talks about ki ner mitzvah v'torah or. Every other mitzvah is like a candle. Torah is like the source of light. It is this overwhelming source of light. It has to be the greatest Zechus. So the Gemara says, you know what? It is the Zechus of Torah. But not the Zechus of actually learning Torah, the Zechus of encouraging the learning of Torah. Encouraging the children to learn, encouraging the husband to learn, that's the zechus of Torah that a woman partakes. Now, it's so interesting. Couldn't the Gemara have just said, she does partake in the zechus of Torah when she chooses to learn? But the Gemara doesn't say that. The Gemara says, no, that wouldn't be such a great zechus because she's not obligated to do that. So still, at this point, nothing negative, just that it's not the greatest zuchus. Meaning, what is the best way a woman could spend her time in Avodas Hashem? The number one answer for men is going to be Talmud Torah. The number one answer for women, at this point, based on this Gemara, would seem to be encouraging Talmud Torah, and secondarily, doing all other mitzvahs. So that's what it would seem to be, but nothing negative about learning Torah. So where do we get something negative about learning Torah? So the Mishnah Maseches Sota says, you know, it's true that the Zechus of Torah may help a woman in that time of being a Sota, if she were ever found guilty, but Rabbi Lazar Omer, Kala Melamed Es Bito Torah, Melamda Tiflus. That someone who teaches his daughter Torah, it's as if he's teaching her. How to translate the word Tiflus is somewhat of a debate, but let's say the way some Rishonim understand immorality. It's like teaching her how to be an immoral person. So says the Gemara, really? Where in the Torah does it tell, you know, here's how to be an immoral person? So the Gemara says, it's not that you're actually teaching immorality, but ki'ilu melamda tiflus. It's as if you're teaching immorality. Then one Tana pipes up and says, yeah, but it may be like teaching immorality, but I'd rather have tiflus and survive the Sota ordeal than not have tiflus and not survive the Sota ordeal. So call it whatever you want, but it's going to help her survive. So I'm still going to teach my daughter Torah. So a very interesting discussion, but that's the first sign of negativity you see in Shas. The first time you find that there's something wrong, there's something negative about teaching a woman Torah. So the question then becomes, why is it Kitlam Alam de Tiflus? And is this the kind of thing that might change over time? You know, there are certain halachos that clearly change over time depending on new realities. And there are certain halachos that clearly don't. Right? You know, if you live in a global economy where you need to be on top of things 24 hours a day, 7 days a week to run a successful business, you still can't work on Shabbos, no matter what. That's not going to change, never will change. Jews cannot work on Shabbos. But on the other hand, you have a halacha, for example, that a baby that is a premature baby, premature birth, if the baby was born in the 7th month of pregnancy, so it has a chance of survival, and therefore you can move the baby on Shabbos and care for the baby because the baby will survive. But born in the 8th month of pregnancy, the Gemara assumes no baby has ever survived that, and therefore the baby's muktzah on Shabbos, there's nothing you could really do. So that halacha obviously has changed. That's been noted already in way earlier generations, because Baruch Hashem, if you look outside our shul on any given Shabbos morning, you will see many babies that were born in the 8th month that Baruch Hashem are running around and playing and are not a nefel, are a bar kayama. That's obviously a reality that has changed. So the question is over here, and many areas of halacha, when do we assume that the change in society, a change in science, a change in nature, a change in reality is going to change the halacha, and when not? But in order to understand if any change in society should change the halacha, we first need to understand this halacha. What would be bad about teaching Torah to women? You know, and just to, at the outset, I utterly reject any argument that goes along the lines of, you know, the kind of argument you would find on a blog or something that goes along the, well, of course, the power-hungry rabbis wanted to siphon off the competition, so they shut out the women so that they wouldn't have any competition. That is not the way Chazal worked. That never was the way Chazal worked. It's not the way Gedolei Yisrael work nowadays either, if you've ever actually met them or spoken to them. That's absurd. I mean, I just read an article, probably the most idiotic article I've ever. Someone wrote an article online about how the Isser of Lashon Hara is also an attempt by the rabbis to silence women. Because she said, well, it used to be women weren't so educated in anything else, so they couldn't talk about science or math or whatever. So of course, what are they going to talk about? They're going to talk about other people. And the rabbis came up with rules to stop women from talking about other people, which means stopping women from talking entirely. That's absurd. This was not a plot against women. This was a plot to try to get people to be nice to each other and to maybe say nice things about each other. There are no like backroom plotting, you know, that goes on. So what's this halacha really all about? So the Rambam gives us a little bit of a clue. The Rambam in the first paragraph of Hilchos Talmud Torah writes that, first of all, he says, Isha shalom de Torah, if a woman chooses to learn Torah, yesh la schar, she gets reward for it. Avaleinu kischar ish, mipnei shalom etztaves. Not the same schar a man would get for that same mitzvah, because a man is commanded and that mitzvah a woman is not, and that goes back to the rule, that when one is commanded, they get a higher level of schar. Then the Rambam says, va'afal pi she yesh la schar, even though she gets reward for learning Torah, Tzivu chachamim shlo yilamid adam es bito Torah. So right away you see a distinction. A woman wants to learn Torah, great, you'll get schar. But the chachamim advised against or commanded not to teach one's daughter Torah. Why? So the Rambam gives a reason. The question is what he means by this. Mipnei sharov hanashim, the majority of women, so right away he leaves a little bit of an opening, because he says the majority always assumes that there's also a minority that are not this way. Sharov hanashim ein da'ata mechuvanos lehislamed, are not mentally prepared or intellectually prepared to learn properly. Elehin motzios divrei Torah ledivrei havai lefi anias daitan, with the lack of intellectual sophistication, they're likely to misunderstand every part of Torah that you try to teach to women. Now you could understand why someone writing, I was going to say in the 11th or 12th century, but really in any century before the 20th century, why someone writing at any point in history before that would say something like that. Because if someone is completely uneducated in the way, in academia, in basic academic knowledge, in how to read and how to write and how to process information in an analytical way, so of course the first time they're introduced to it, it's going to sound like Chinese. It's going to sound ridiculous. It's like walking into, a calculus class and like, wait, math is only supposed to be numbers. It's not supposed to be all these, you know, different signs and numbers. And it's a completely different language that they can't possibly understand. So you already see why this is something that might change. Someone who's more prepared for this kind of learning, it might change. Now, you have a lot of discussion that I'm not going to get into in great detail over here, but a lot of discussion about a possible difference between Torah Shebichsav and Torah Shebal Peh. The Rambam already writes that this is only true of Torah Shebal Peh, that it could be like Limda Tiflus, that it's going to be like immorality because it's teaching, it could be so easily misunderstood. But he says Torah Shebichsav is different. It's not Kimalam de Tiflus. It's not like teaching this immorality, although the Rambam recommends against teaching Torah Shebichsav also. So you could also see, what we're trying to set up over here is how there could be such divergent views on a topic amongst Yirei Shemayim, amongst people who are honest to goodness just trying to come to the right Pesach. If you just read that Rambam, and you just, you know, translate word for word and say that halacha can never change, so the halacha as it was in the days of the Rambam has to be the way it is today, you're going to end up with a Satmar model of Torah education for women. Because he says, don't teach even Torah Shebichsav. It's just not as bad as teaching Torah Shebaal Peh. But he says, don't teach even Torah Shebichsav. And that's why in the Satmar schools, in the book, the one of the biographies of the Satmar Rebbe, the entitled The Rebbe, The Extraordinary Life. It happens to be, it's interesting, every Hasidic sect that ever put out a book about the Rebbe titled the book The Rebbe, like he's the only one, right? So The Extraordinary Life and Worldview of Rabbeinu Yoel, titled down the Satmar Rebbe Zuchuso Yagin Aleinu, on page 474 and 475, it says in that book that Rav Chaim Mordechai Steinberg, one of the founding parents of Beis Ruchel, was once reviewing his daughter's notebook. He discovered that the teacher had instructed the girls to write the Hebrew words, Ani Ohev Es Habeged, I love the garment, as writing practice. He called the Mujayir Rav, the Menal Ruchni, over the Talmud Torah and the Beis Ruchel, and asked, why are they teaching this to our daughters? Nephew to the Rebbe, the Mujayir Rav enjoyed a close relationship with him. When the Satmar Rebbetzin heard that Reb Chaim Mordechai had complaints about the curriculum, she had him summoned to the Rebbe's house. In the entry room, she listened to his complaint and discussed it with him. She didn't see what he had against the girls learning the meaning of a few words in Lashon HaKodesh. Meaning, mind you, this isn't even Torah. This is to understand the words Ani Ohev Es Habeged. In masculine, for some reason. Not sure. As the discussion increased in volume, apparently Chaim Mordechai and the Rebbetzin were yelling at each other, the Rebbe came out of his room and inquired as to the reason for the commotion. Rabbi Chaim Mordechai explained, the Rebbe founded a girls' school to raise a new generation of girls like our mothers and grandmothers in Europe. Now I see that my daughter brought home a notebook in which she wrote, Ani Ohev Es Habeged. The Rebbetzin argues that the girls can't be so ignorant. They're allowed to understand what they're saying when they daven. I had a grandmother who passed away at 103, and she knew the entire Tehillim and Ma'amados by heart. But she didn't understand what she was saying. That's how our children should grow up as well. Said the Rebbe to his Rebbetzin, he's right. Unbelievable, no? That not to even understand what you're saying when you're davening. So that's the truth is, that's beyond what the Rambam never says, that a person's not supposed to understand what they're davening.
Isn't it like part of the tefillah to know what you're saying?
Yes, but as it goes on to explain two paragraphs later, strictly speaking, girls and women are permitted to learn and understand the words of Chumash itself, just as they listen to the king's reading of the Torah in the Beis HaMikdash. The Taz makes this point. It has to be permissible to at least learn the basic meaning of Chumash, because there used to be a mitzvah called Hakel, where Anashim, Nashim, Vitaf, everyone would come and gather, and the king would read from the Torah. And they understood what he was reading from the Torah. But it is best not to teach them to understand any Lashon HaKodesh, lest they independently study what is forbidden. Meaning he made his own gzeira. If you teach women Lashon HaKodesh, then they might be curious to learn more things in Lashon HaKodesh, and that will lead them to learning Torah, and that would be a terrible thing. So that's where, you know, that's one extreme. Now that's a very, very far extreme. That's one extreme. Less extreme, and I guess more loyal to the exact words of the Rambam and the Poskim, is Rav Moshe Feinstein's position. Also, I would say, if you weren't familiar with this position of Rav Moshe Feinstein before, you'd probably be somewhat surprised at how, you know, non-bending he was on this issue. And in Yerodei Chelek Gimel Siman Pei Zayin, Rav Moshe Feinstein in the Tshuva to Rav Elia Svei, the Rashiva, Zichron Levracha, of the Philadelphia Yeshiva, well, Ko-Rashi Yeshiva, together with Rav Shmuel Kamenetsky, Ibad al-Chaim, Rav Shmuel Kamenetsky, Shlita. So Rav Moshe writes, Hine bedavar shenimtzu batei sefer le'yeladot le'naros shenikru b'shem Beis Yaakov. The fact that there's such a thing called the Beis Yaakov. Sherotzma anhalav amorim lilmorim an mishnayos. They want to learn Mishnayos. So says Rav Moshe, it says in the Gemara and Sota, and the Rambam paskins this, that you shouldn't teach girls Torah, and if you do, teach them Torah Shebal Peh, it's as if you're teaching them Tiflus. He says, Al Kalpana Mishnayos Shu Torah Shebal Peh, Tzivacham Shalo Yilamdum, Vukilu Limdum Tiflus. So you should not teach Mishnayos. But he says, here's what you can teach. There's one Masechta of Mishnayos that is a good idea to teach. Virak Pirkei Avos. Mishum Shehu in Yani Musar, Vanhogos Tovos, Yesh Lamdam Behezber La Oran La Avas Torah, Ulmidos Tovos. Because Pirkei Avos will teach proper Midos, it will teach a love of Torah. Avalos Shar Masechtos, but not other Masechtos. And says Rav Moshe, you may wonder, why? You're Rav Eliezer. Normally when Rav Moshe wrote to major Rosh Yeshiva, he wrote long tshuvos with, you know, many sections to it. It's a tiny little paragraph. He's writing to Rav Eliezer, who could handle reading a long tshuva. Rav Moshe writes, you know why I'm writing such a short tshuva? Umitoch hapshitus akatzer. Because it's such an obvious point, I don't think I need to really expound on this. Meaning it's so obvious that these are the limitations, so I don't need to say any more than this. That's what Rav Moshe held. Now there's another important, I'll tell you, when I was once talking to Mari Varabi Rav Shechter, he was beaming. He had just come back from Eretz Yisrael. I think at that point it was his oldest granddaughter's bat mitzvah that was just celebrated in Eretz Yisrael. And he was saying how she had learnt Mishnayos, I think Seder Moed, with her father and learnt it so well. And he was talking to her about what she had learnt, and he was so proud about the fact that she learnt entire the Seder Moed, all the Masechtas of Seder Moed, together with her father. So he obviously doesn't hold like Rav Moshe. He thought that this was such a wonderful thing and such a great thing for a girl to do before a bas mitzvah. You know, I often get the question from fathers more than mothers about what to learn with their daughters before their bas mitzvah, that if they're going to make a goal to learn something, what would be a worthwhile limud to take on before bat mitzvah. I always commented in the past that I'm the last guy to ask because my first four children were all boys, so I didn't really have a feel for what resonates with a young lady, although I'm getting it a little more now, what resonates with a young lady. But so how do we get from, let's say, the Satmar Rebbe, okay, that's an extreme, but Rav Moshe is pretty mainstream, I think we could all agree, it was a fairly mainstream posek. How do we get from Rav Moshe to, let's say, Rav Shechter, or even beyond that, to, let's say, Rav Salvechik, or even beyond that, I would say, as we'll explain, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein was a major, not just tolerant of Torah study for women, not just supportive of some Torah study for women, but a major champion of Torah study for women on the highest level with no limitations. That's clear. There's no, you know, as much as you could debate what Rav Salvechik's thinking was in making Maimonides Kawed, and how important did he think it was that the girls be taught, Gemara like the boys. Rav Salvechik never spoke about it publicly, so we don't really know exactly what went through his mind. Rav Lichtenstein was very clear on many occasions, spoke about it very publicly. It's published in numerous places. So one more critical point over here. There is a Ramah in Shulchan Aruch, and everyone agrees to this Ramah as well. It's a question of how to fulfill it. The Ramah writes, "Umikal makom chayeves ha'isha lilmod dina mashiachim li'isha." A woman clearly has to learn the halachos of how to be an observant Jew. There's no question that a woman has to know Hilchos Shabbos, otherwise you're going to be Mechal Shabbos every week, and that you're Chayiv Misa for the same way a man is Chayiv Misa for being Mechal Shabbos. That would be terrible. So you need to know whether you're allowed to peel the stickers off of the apples on Shabbos. You need to know, like, these the Hilchos Shabbos. A person needs to know Hilchos Kashrus, a basic Hilchos Kashrus. A person needs to know. So the Satmar Rebbe agreed to that also. The Satmar Rebbe said, yeah, so they watch what their mothers do, and that's how they learn. And they'll just do exactly like their mothers did, and they, you know, it goes all the way back to Har Sinai like that. Rav Shechter, on the other hand, has said numerous times, no, you need to know the halacha, because there are new applications all the time. Yeah, how did your mother, when you were growing up, how did your mother use the sous vide? You know, like, what? What was that? It didn't exist. How did she use the warming drawer? You know, these things didn't exist. So it has to be that there's a deeper understanding of the halacha. So Rav Shechter thought the best way to learn halacha, and clearly the best way to learn halacha, is to learn through all the relevant sugyas in the Gemara, and then see what the Rishonim have to say about it and really learn the halacha. It takes a lot of time to do that in Hilchos Shabbos, but I thought that would be the ideal fulfillment of that Ramah, without veering, without any great chidushim, without even suggesting societal change. Just simple words of the Ramah. You have to know the halachos. How are you going to know the halachos if you don't understand the underpinnings of the halachos? And from what I've seen, at least from my wife's notes and old notebooks from seminary, is that's the way they teach halacha in, at least in MMY. They would teach with the whole sugya and with the Rishonim and then how the Achronim dealt with it. Maybe not by opening a Gemara, maybe yes by opening a Gemara, depending on the sugya, but, you know, I think that's an issue of... Rav Lichtenstein used to make fun of Tashbap, is that what they call it? He said, I grew up my whole life learning Torah. I learned Talmud Bavli, I learned Shulchan Aruch, I learned Rabbi. I never heard of Tashbap, never heard of any such area of study. He thought it was silly. You're not going to open up a Gemara, but you're going to learn all the Gemaras on a worksheet. What difference does it make? You know, when you're going to... So he thought that was a... But others obviously didn't think it was silly, because others obviously taught that way. So that's just the Ramah. So that's one critical element, is how to understand that Ramah. Are we to understand that a person should learn the halachos really well? And in fact, in the Sefer Shmir Shabbos Kehilchasa, Perek Lamed Beis, Os Yud Gimli, quotes that Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld, who was far from a left-winger. Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld was like, I guess, the Haredi answer to Rav Kook, I guess you could say. Or if Cook was the Zionistic answer to Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld. Shekavalo shir mi'ishto ba'orachayim kol yom chatzi sha'a. He had a chavrusa with his wife for a half hour every day in Shulchan Aruch Arachayim. They tell guys in yeshiva, you're not looking for a chavrusa when you're dating, you're looking for a wife. You know, Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld was looking for a chavrusa. He learned to have a chavrusa with his wife for a half hour every day in Shulchan Aruch Arachayim. Now that sounds like a serious limud. Not just what did your babi do? You know, it sounds like a serious limud of really learning through the halachos. But then there's another change, and this is the change that gets a lot more attention, and rightfully so, because it was a groundbreaking moment when the Chafetz Chaim, when the Sefer Likutei Halachos, let's try to see if I have it over here printed in my notes. Apparently I don't. But the Chafetz Chaim in Sefer Likutei Halachos writes that all of this has to change in our times. Because it used to be that women were not educated in anything. They didn't know how to read, they didn't know how to write, they didn't get a degree in anything. So Torah was able to be transmitted in the same way that they picked up any basic knowledge. By looking around, by seeing what people do, and just, you know, intuiting how to behave and how to be an intelligent person. But there was no structured education. But now that there is actual structured education, in a secular sense, the Torah has to have what to offer. The Torah has to at least be as sophisticated. We can't offer Torah that's so much less sophisticated than the secular knowledge that's being offered. And therefore, the Chafetz Chaim said it's time to set up Beis Yaakov, to set up schools, to set up institutions where girls are going to learn. Based on that, Rav Soloveitchik apparently took it one step further and said, what were they learning already in the days of the Chafetz Chaim? A little Russian reading and writing? You know, they weren't earning PhDs. And nowadays, Soloveitchik, living in Boston in the 1970s, was looking around and women were earning, you know, all sorts of advanced degrees and were really making their mark in academia and in the workplace. And he never spoke about it publicly, but his grandson, Rav Twersky, in his hesped for his grandfather, said as follows: the halacha prohibiting Torah study for women is not indiscriminate or all-encompassing. There is complete unanimity that women are obligated to study halachos pertaining to mitzvos which are incumbent upon them. Meaning he's referring to the Ramah. Everyone agrees that women have to learn halachos related to them. The prohibition of teaching Torah Shebaal Peh to women relates to optional study. The iser, whatever iser it might be, for women to study Torah is only when that study is optional. It's just a question of what you put in the category of optional and what you put in the category of mandatory. If ever circumstances dictate that study of Torah Shebaal Peh is necessary to provide a firm foundation for faith, such study becomes obligatory. and obviously lies beyond the pale of any prohibition. The way Rav Tversky explained Rav Salvechik's Shita on this matter is that the Rama says that women have to learn basic halacha so they can know how to be a religious Jew. The Rama would therefore also agree that anything that's necessary to keep a woman religious with a basic proper hashkafa is not optional, is an absolute obligation. When women are being educated in the highest levels, Torah has to offer something equally sophisticated in order to keep people's interest in Yiras Shamayim, in order to keep people's interest in learning Torah. So that's no longer optional. So Tversky continues, undoubtedly the Rav's prescription was more far-reaching than that of the Chafetz Chaim and others. Meaning he acknowledges, Chafetz Chaim never said anything about women learning Torah Shebaal Peh. But the difference, here's the line, the difference in magnitude should not obscure their fundamental agreement. Meaning it was the natural extension as society continues to move in a certain direction. That is not Rav Aaron's position. Rav Aaron's position is not about, oh, what are they permitted to learn? Rav Aaron Lichtenstein's position was much more based on an absolute love of Torah. You know, like the Rambam writes, there's a mitzvah in the Torah to love Hashem. I say it every day. Mitzvah to love Hashem. How do you do that? So the Rambam writes in Sefer HaMitzvos, well, you know when you find something great, you know, you find something that you love, and you find a great restaurant that no one knows about, or like a dish on a menu that no one knows about, and your friend's going to that restaurant, oh, you got to try this. Why do you get such a geschmack by telling them that they have to try that? You're not going to be eating it again, they're going to be. Why is that so enjoyable? No, it's enjoyable to find something and share it. Because when you love something, you want to share it with others. You want others to have it. You get the sense Rav Aaron was driven by such a love of Torah that he couldn't imagine keeping 50% of the Jewish people away from that which is so amazing, from Talmud Torah, which is such an incredible experience. He was also motivated by not diluting the talent pool, meaning they've done studies of countries that limit women's education, and they tend to be more backwards in terms of advancing in many different areas because you've taken away 50% of your talent and basically shut it out. So I think Rav Lichtenstein might have been, according to some Talmidim at least, might have been motivated by that as well, that if we're going to enhance Torah to the greatest degree, we want as many people involved in Torah as well. I think he had a hard time imagining a completely fulfilled spiritual life absent Talmud Torah. And one more bit of halacha before we close this hashkafa. All of this was about teaching Torah to women. There is very likely a difference between teaching Torah, a father teaching Torah, a school setting up a system to teach Torah, versus a woman who's inclined to want to learn Torah. The Prisha in Yoredeya writes that it's clear from the Rambam that independently motivated women are allowed to learn. The Rambam's discussions, Rov Nashim, Daitan Kalos, you know, this kind of, they ain't Daitan Mechuvanos, and that's why the father shouldn't teach them. But if a woman finds that she gets, you know, there's some people, I know my wife certainly has friends like this, that in sixth grade already, they were like, they were just soaking it in. They just wanted, not that I knew Alana in sixth grade, that was like, it wasn't until like 10th grade, but they were soaking it in. They just wanted to learn more and more and more. And it wasn't because they were huge feminists in sixth grade. It was they just had this incredible attraction to Talmud Torah. So that, the Prisha, the Torah Tamima quotes from the Sefer that says like this, there's much more room to assume that would be encouraged and should be guided properly. Now, a few issues of Hashkafa over here. It's very easy to judge people as not being l'shem shemayim, you know, that whenever someone's doing something that doesn't fit with your picture of what exactly the ideal frumkeit should look like, it's very easy to say, oh, they're not l'shem shemayim, it's all feminism. And the truth is, feminism is not a Jewish concept. There is no such thing in Judaism called feminism. There are mitzvos, there are minhagim, there are all sorts of great things, great concepts in Judaism. Feminism isn't one of them. I'm not saying it's anti or pro, it's just, it doesn't exist. We believe in serving Hashem. So what does God want from us? That's the only question we have in life. So there's no like other ideal that we're trying to live up to. But Rav Moshe Feinstein writes in the Tshuva, and I think pretty much all Gedolei HaPoskim agree with this, that if a person is motivated by some other ideal than serving Hashem, we should view that with great suspicion. And whether that other ideal is feminism or anything else, we should view that with great suspicion. The ideal that we should be motivated. So it's very easy to just say any woman who wants to learn on a high level, oh, it's not L'shem Shemayim, it's just feminism. Until you actually talk to some of the women who are learning on a very high level. You know, I remember I once gave, I don't remember if it was the last time I gave this year, but maybe it was online, and Lisa Septimus heard it online. She emailed me. I had a very fascinating email exchange with her. She was describing to me, she was like one of these people like I was saying before, like at a very early age. She was brought up in an institution where it wasn't even a hava mina that there's anything wrong with a girl learning. She wasn't doing it to like show anybody. She was just a good student, just trying to do her best, and she did very well. And you know, it was always something that just spoke to a person. So you can look at a person like that and say, ah, it's just feminism. No, that's really that could really very well be a person's avodas Hashem. So I don't think it's fair to just judge people without knowing them and without seeing any indications. You know, having said that, there are certain institutions by their very nature, because maybe they provide more of these kinds of opportunities, will attract, in addition to the L'Shem Shemayim crew, will also attract an element that's clearly not L'Shem Shemayim. And that will often affect the entire reputation of the institution and the way people understandably will look at a place like that, or at women who come from a place like that. You proud of me? I didn't say girls, I said women. Mayim Bialik will be proud, right? Second, it's also important to realize that what is right for one community is not necessarily right for another community. And even within a community, what's right for one person may not necessarily be right for another person. There are certain people that, you know, you have to do what talks to your neshama, what really motivates a greater sense of avas Hashem. For some people who are more intellectually inclined, Talmud Torah is going to do that. And for some people who are more chesed inclined, chesed will do that. For some people who are more inclined to, you know, all sorts of different things. Thank God our Torah is very vast, and there are a lot of ways to express ourselves in a spiritual way. For some people who are more inclined to meaningful tefillah, so tefillah will do that. But part of wanting to have avodas Hashem opportunities, certainly when those say that I want every opportunity a man has, even if it's L'Shem Shemayim, is to experience tefillah as well. You know, and that's something that women are generally more equipped to do than men are. Our daughters should be taught, yeah, learning absolutely, you know, to the extent that the school that we send them to, you know, that fits with the general hashkafa that we're going to be teaching them. And, you know, there's so much to learn no matter what. Look, kulei alma, there's so much to learn. And we can, you know, we can be teaching our daughters so much more than we are. You know, I just learned with my daughter a few minutes a night, and we're already, she's 8 years old. Yeshua, Shoftim, Shmuel Al, Shmuel Beis, Melachim Al, Melachim Beis. My sons run away when they see me because they don't want to learn with me. My daughter, I come home, Abba, let's learn. Right? So there's so much more that we could be teaching our daughters. But we also need to make sure that our daughters are taught to daven, and the value of davening b'tzibur. And shul shouldn't just be a place that when they're little enough to just go and play with their friends, then we'll send them to get them out of my hair in the morning. Oh, but once they're old enough to daven, then I'm not going to send them anymore because they're not annoying me at home anymore when they're old enough to daven. Well, it's not about whether they're annoying us at home. It has to do with how are we going to educate our daughters properly. I heard an unbelievable talk a couple of years ago from, I forgot her first name, from Rabbi Ezra Schwartz's wife about this issue. And she was, she's a little more progressive-minded, and she was saying that, you know, we got to put our money where our mouth is. How come the Ezra's Nashim isn't full? Now, Baruch Shem and Har Shul, it is. And one of the things I'm looking forward to when we have a building is that we'll actually have a permanent Ezra's Nashim for all the tefillahs. I already prepared my daughter. Once that shul is built, you know, you'll be, you know, about 15, so you're gonna be expected to be in that Ezra's Nashim every Friday night. Why not? Singing, you know, you should know, you should recognize the tune of L'Chadodi. You should be davening in shul. But there are also a few things that I think I can categorically reject that are just out there. one thing that I categorically reject is the idea that women can't possibly have a full religious commitment and relationship with Hashem without a high-level Talmud Torah. I only had to meet my grandmother to know that that's not true. And it's just, I cannot accept that a woman, you know, that Dore Doros, I think there's no greater Motzi Laz al Rishonim, you know, saying something negative about previous generations, than to say that a woman can't have a meaningful relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu without high-level Talmud Torah. It could be that for certain women it's very helpful, but I do believe that men cannot have a high-level relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu without Talmud Torah, because it's a mitzvah that we're obligated to do. So we're failing in our obligations to the extent that we're failing in Talmud Torah. I also categorically reject the idea that if a woman enjoys learning, it means she's a feminist and a threat to our Masorah and a threat to everything that we stand for. I don't think that's true. And third, and this is most important, and I was happy to find this in print when I was in Eretz Yisrael last, when were we there? In December or so? So I bought a sefer, Shalos Tshuvos Maimor Mordechai, Mordechai Eliyahu Zichron Levracha, his Shalos and Tshuvos, and he has a very short tshuva about women in Talmud Torah. And this is something that I always felt, and I was looking for someone to just say it explicitly. Rav Mordechai Eliyahu writes, essentially, that what does the Gemara say? That if you teach your daughter Torah, it's ki'ilu limda tiflus. It's as if you're teaching her immorality. You know what's worse than doing something that's akin to teaching immorality? You know what might even be worse? Actual immorality. So a woman's going to go on Facebook all day, bad-mouthing everyone and saying how this one is that, and that one's that, and this one's, and they're a feminist learning Torah, and, blah, blah, blah. And the one learning Torah, you know, she's the bad guy. While the person, I'm going to make sure that I watch every episode of, you know, whatever inappropriate television show, and I catch every, that's okay, because I'm a woman, I'm not chayav in Talmud Torah, that's okay. But the woman who wants to learn Torah, that's not okay. No, obviously Chazal understood that immorality itself is worse than that which is akin to immorality. And Rav Mordechai Eliyahu says this explicitly. He says, Mutav shetalami divrei kodesh, me'asher tikra devarim asurim v'divrei havai. Better to be engaged in divrei kodesh than to be engaged in stupidity, in narishkeit. So that certainly is the case. And he quotes, he says, Mi gadol, who's greater than the Ben Ish Chai, who writes about his grandmother that she used to learn 18 prakam of Mishnayos a day. That's pretty intense. But most importantly, and with this we'll really, really close. Most importantly, every Jew has to spend their entire lives in a growth mindset. Has to spend their entire lives figuring out, how am I going to grow closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? And figuring out what works for me in terms of growing closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So I'm not here to champion Talmud Torah for women, or to come out against Torah Shebaal Peh for women, or anything like that. I think the most critically is we need to be growing in Ruchnius. And if, you know, someone's going to say, well, I'm not going to, you know, go to Shiurim because I don't believe in that, but instead I'm going to be doing nothing, or instead I'm going to be doing stupidity. So that would be terrible. At the same time, I was just having a conversation with my sister last week in Florida, not this sister, one who lives in Florida, where she was saying that, like, in one of the shuls, they were so upset that the millennials, that's what they call them, right? That they don't show up to all the programming, the amazing programming that the shul offers. And she showed me her four adorable little children. And she said, really, am I supposed to not be with them at 6:30 at night because the shul is running an amazing program? You know, my avoda and the way I'm coming close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu is to be with them and to take care of my family. Is there a higher calling than that I'm missing than taking care of my family? And we have to be very sensitive to that. But the point should be that we should understand that this is our calling in life, that our calling in life is to come close to the Ribbono Shel'olam, to raise a family of people who are close to the Ribbono Shel'olam, and to always be oriented toward growth in whichever way we can be, in whichever way we can be oriented toward growth and toward connection to the Ribbono Shel'olam. And we do that, and that's the chus, we'll be zocha to raise Dorei Doros of Ohavei Hashem and Yirei Shamayim.